A happy, happy, happy New Year, everybody. This is Rick Kogan. The show's After Hours. It's 2 hours long today, and I'm playing musical bumps from the famous Broadway show Damn Yankees, because this first hour is devoted to what is perhaps the finest baseball film to come around in a long time. It's called High and Outside, and it is stars my friend Phil Donlan, who is in here right now. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Rick, and thank you for having me. It's a total pleasure.
Wait, silly, I feel now, Phil, like I've been following your kind of the angst-filled but also successful Hollywood career since you were a boy.
Just I know little, it's not been that long. A little young latchkey child from the South Side. Yeah, I had my papers, well, got off the train.
Yep. Most kids who grow up in Bridgeport, as you did, aspire to jobs in streets and sanitation and or the fifth floor of City Hall.
Yes.
When did you get the acting
bug? I did a play in high school.
What high school?
Senior year of high school. It was Glenbard North High School out in the burbs. And I did a play called Golden Boy. It was a Clifford Odets.
Sure.
And I auditioned for the play on a dare. I was mainly a sports guy. Played baseball.
Yeah, well, sure.
Ran track, cross country, whole thing.
And a dare from who? A friend or a girlfriend?
One of my best friends.
Okay.
And he said, I'm going to try out for this play. And I said, well, if you're going to do it, I'm also going to do it. And we both got cast. He got cast as, the Golden Boy. And I got cast as Eddie Fuseli, the gangster. And I played quite a layered character for a senior in high school at that time. Because
you did this with no previous acting experience.
I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
I had no clue. And all of the theater clique.
Sure.
They were very upset that I was in the, that I'd gotten
the lead. Because
you
were a jock, and what were you doing in the theater?
What was I doing? Yeah. So that's what started it, and I did that, and I'll never forget. I think I told my mom after opening night. I was like, "This is what I want to do for the rest of my life." So I knew then.
And I know how parents react to that fabulous career choice of being an actor.
Yeah, it's great.
How supportive? Would she say, "Phil, let me try something else. I mean, maybe you wanted to act in something other than a high school play."
Never forget when I talked about wanting to go to off to college somewhere in New York or L.A. And my parents just sort of looked at me and said, "That's not happening. That's not going. That's not going to happen."
Did they have a notion of what you should do in a career?
Yeah, they were always supportive, certainly, of whatever I wanted to do. But I think they always thought maybe I would get into something more like graphic art design or something. I was really into drawing. I was into, stuff like that. Or possibly baseball if I wanted to continue to pursue that.
You were that good.
Let me say something. After doing this movie, this baseball movie, I'm glad I never tried. Because it's near... I thought acting was hard.
Yeah, see, there's some unbelievable similarities to this film and the sort of end of a career of a young man who's kind of desperate to stay in the game.
Right.
But it is such a kind of metaphor for what Hollywood is, too, don't you think?
Sure, absolutely. It's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. I'll never forget. I had the pleasure of having David Mamet as a guest professor in college.
And where'd you go to college?
Roosevelt University, the theater conservatory there. And he said, if you are, and I'll never forget this, and I tell this to anyone who ever wants to be in in entertainment in general. He said, I'm paraphrasing, but if you are prepared for a life of disappointment.
And rejection.
Peppered with moments of the highest highs you'll ever feel in your entire life, then stay in the business, stay an actor. And he's totally right, because I've had more rejection than I care to. I mean, I could talk about all the shows I never got, but the things I've got.
I mean, that's something I want to, you're going to be on for the whole hour, and that's something I want to get at. But that is an intrinsic part of the actor's life. Not everyone can be The Rock. Or one of these jokers, or Matt Damon, who scores immediately.
Who wants to be Matt Damon?
Not that he's a bad actor, but...
I beg to differ.
But having seen the Chicago theater community, and even the people who've been successful, Billy Peterson, Laurie Metcalf, Natalie West, John Malkovich, it is a series of rejections. How do you build up the kind of armor to deal with that? You started in theater here, right?
Yes. I had my own theater company. called the Gilead Theater Company, and we were nominated for a bunch of Jeff Awards, and we were around for 5 years. Our first show was Balm and Gilead, which was the famous
show at the Organic Theater.
The Steppenwolf revival. Yeah. Billy Peterson was the lead in that. And so I did that, and I did a lot of local theater. I did Looking Glass, Wisdom Bridge, the Organic Theater Company, the original, before they shut down on Clark Street.
Right.
So I and actually Laurie Metcalf said something once at like an actor symposium I was at during college at Steppenwolf, and she said, to answer your question, because I feel the same, she said Steppenwolf was what ultimately prepared her for Hollywood.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. That was her training ground to build up what she needed to take the rejection, to be able to take the what comes your way in Hollywood. And I feel that the same. Like, Chicago gave me the confidence I needed to go out there.
You started getting work. I mean, you started getting commercial work that paid something like a salary when you were here, right?
Completely. Yeah, the first film I ever got. Well, the first job that got me my SAG card was a Surge commercial for Mountain Dew way back in the day. And I was so excited. But then the first film I ever booked was, and you were able to have these cool opportunities, was a movie called To Sir With Love 2, directed by Mr. Bogdanovich.
Sure.
I had no idea who he was. Shannon was in that too, and he actually got fired.
See, there's a guy who's had a nice, formed a nice career. But
he's
doing
fantastic.
You know, I'm so glad you're on today, because I think this year is going to be a really, really good year for you, Phil Dunham.
Well, thank you.
What made you make that, before we take a commercial break, what made you, Chicago theater is real fun when you're young, and you don't have to make a lot of money, and you can make a lot of friends, and most of your friends are not making any money. What made you make that leap to go to L.A.? It was around 2001?
Jane Alderman. She really pushed me to go out there.
She was a great casting agent here.
Yeah, and it was sad to hear
very
about her.
Sad.
And of course, she was in my film, Man in the Silo.
Yeah,
I'll never forget. I went out there with Joe Sikora and kind of a small group of actors who she had picked.
Did you go out for pilot season?
It was
used to be a great thing, ladies and gentlemen, called pilot season, where they would cast hundreds of people for potential television shows. And that's when most Chicago actors said, even the ones like Amy Morton, who hated pilot season, they'd go out there to try to get work. They don't do that so much anymore.
No, they don't. They don't. No, the pilot season has gone away.
Gone. Mm-hmm. What was, before we take a break, and I'm spending the whole hour with Phil Dunham. He is not only a talented actor, he is a really talented director. He did a movie called The Man in the Silo, starring Ernie Hudson, who we hope to talk to later after the half-hour news. That is one of the most haunting movies I've ever seen. So you're doing everything. You get to L.A.
Yes.
Your first impression is, oh, my God, I got to get out of here, or, oh, my God, do I love it here?
My first impression of L.A. was when I was flown out for my first network test. I was probably 22 or 23 for this show that was supposed to be the sequel to Seinfeld, which never went. But Andy Ackerman directed and wrote. It was called People Who Fear People. And it was like me and John Cryer and a couple. But it never – it was just – again, we shot the pilot, did everywhere.
Yeah.
I went straight from the airport to Paramount, and my first thought was I thought it was on Mars. I was like, where am I? What is going on? Like, I don't understand anything that's – like, I don't get this.
Yeah,
I don't see clouds. There's palm. It looked really surreal to me.
Yeah.
So,
but you've stuck at it. Phil Dunham's my guest this whole hour to kick off a new year, which I certainly hope and think will be a great year for him.
When we met in 1938, it was November.
I'm playing Musical Bums from Damn Yankees, a great Broadway show and a pretty decent movie, because my guest, Phil Dunham, guest and friend's latest film is High and Outside, a baseball movie. We're going to talk much more about that, but we've taken Phil so far on the show from childhood in Bridgeport
yes.
to senior year play at Glenbard East West, whatever it is, Glenbard
yes.
something.
Absolutely.
And then he starts yes. a theater company in Chicago. Now you're in L.A.
Everyone's on the edge of their seat right now. They're like, what's going to happen
what
next
happened
in Phil's
LA?
Life?
Yeah. What happened
what's
in
going
LA?
On?
Did he meet Mariah
yeah.
Carey?
Yeah. yeah.
So you're out there. Initially, mm-hmm. where are you staying? Are you staying with buddies, with other friends, with other actors?
No. I mean, I moved out and started a life out there. So,
what is that initial scene like when you have to walk in and introduce yourself to casting agents and producers, and it's, I assume, Phil, it's audition after audition after audition.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most awkward and useless processes I can think exists. Auditioning is silly. I mean, and nobody's good at it.
Yeah.
And anybody who, I mean, and there are plenty of actors out there who are really great professional auditioners.
Sure.
But most actors are not really very good at auditioning. And so it's a really kind of an unfair process, you know. And at the end of the day, you know, it's like when somebody's going to like direct a TV show and you're going to do a guest star role on like NCIS,
right.
do you really need to read 300 guys for the part? I mean, come on.
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
that's
it's
very
silly.
Interesting. That does seem silly. It seems counterproductive. It seems as if you could say, you're fine.
Right.
You're reading three lines in a show. You're a dead body. You're
right.
something else. Was it frustrating?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The audition process is very difficult. And here's what I learned over the years. Finally, it's not so much, and this is in L.A., and it was hard to make this because, you know, Chicago, it's all about your work ethic.
Absolutely.
And it's how good you are.
Let me ask you
job.
Something before that. Yeah. Being a Chicago actor, there still has to be that kind of Chicago reputation attached to any actor who has done stage work in Chicago, yes?
Yes, a little less now, I feel like it was like late 90s, early 2000s. There was this big Chicago...
Malkovich.
Because even the Chicago theater scene, I've heard, has changed here, which
yeah.
I don't really know about anymore. But nonetheless, what I was going to say was with... The auditioning thing. I mean, it's really a process that's set up for failure, really, at the end of the day, you know.
How did you do, though? You obviously started to get work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, what I finally figured out, this is what I was going to say,
yeah.
was that it's not so much about what you do in the room with your lines as your personality. So when you're walking in the room and auditioning, you're selling your personality immediately from the moment you walk in. And I finally figured that out just like a few years ago.
Wow.
And I never knew it. Yeah. I never knew. But it's a personality game. Because you in L.A., and it's a lot different than New York. Again, actors in New York, very prepared. Actors in Chicago, very prepared. There's this thing in L.A. where it's like, if you're late to an audition and you show up and you're sloppy and you haven't showered and you're sort of like this actor's like, I didn't even really read my sides. And like somehow this is cool.
Uh-huh.
Like there's like a cat of like a coolness.
Oh,
like,
it sounds
I'm just going
to
waltz in and just be like, you know, my cool self, man, and just like hang out. And then you're like selling this weird personality thing. And then like, I didn't really look at my sides. And it says there's like this weird laissez-faire type thing going on, but like it sells. And so finally I figured out it's a personality business.
Yeah.
You know?
And you were able to sell yourself on that. You took acting lessons here. I mean, you weren't just like the one-star wonder at Glenbard High School, right?
No, by far. But
yeah.
I went to the four-year, I mean, I went to the
and
theater conservatory
so
for
you
4 years.
Prepared
I was very studied.
You were yeah. prepared out there.
Absolutely.
How do you morph then, Phil, from a working actor to, and I have the feeling it has something to do with the inherent BS of Hollywood, to morph into a writer, because you
mm-hmm.
you co-wrote Man in the Silo.
Right.
And you co-write many things and also direct and want to produce.
Right.
Did you just say to yourself, wait a minute, these people are all idiots. I
yes.
could do all of this.
Yeah, that's what I said, actually.
Was
Took
it?
The words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. I was at an audition, and I can go down the list of all the stuff I know. This will tell you how long I've been doing this for. I was at an audition for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
And I was like, all right. I'm looking around the room, and I'm like, so I drove in traffic for 2 hours, drove around the block for a half an hour, finding parking, making sure I'm not on the wrong side of the street so I don't get a ticket when I come out for $65. Sat in a room, and they were running behind. This turned into a seven-hour day with a bunch of actors who all look like me, and I didn't get the part anyway. And I'm sitting in the room, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, I want more than this.
Yeah.
I want more than this. And I did. And so I wrestled my first short film, and it went to Sundance. IFC bought it, and that sort of started it, where I was like, oh, I can do this.
These kind of things, like Wrestled, which was made in collaboration with the young, talented Mr. Ordauer.
Mr. Stephen Ordauer.
Well, Stephen Ordauer.
Listening.
I hope he is, too. Yeah. If not, he can listen tomorrow when it's posted online. That acts, in many cases, a short film like that acts as a kind of calling card to enter that rarefied studio system, does it not?
It can, yeah. Though there's not really much of a studio system left anymore.
That's true.
Out there.
That's really true.
What you have now is you have studios making, and Ernie could talk way more about this than me. He's well more, a veteran in this regard. But, you know, now it's the tentpole movies, the big, giant opening weekends where the comic book character's the star, not really even the actor.
Exactly.
And now independent film is really like Netflix is kind of considered independent.
Yeah.
It's really anything independent.
Don't you think, career-wise, that is a great change for you and our mutual friend Joe Socorro, who's the star of Power, that there are a lot more avenues now, that you don't have to go and create, you know, Star Wars Junior or Fast and Crazy or
Fast
and Ridiculous.
Vin Diesel.
That you don't have to, that there are many, many more outlets for your talents.
Yes, and High and Outside is I'm not looking to transition into that yet. It's your show. However, but they are a product. I'm just trying to. Don't you have a thing in radio called transitions?
No.
Oh, you don't.
Many people do, but not I.
All right. Very good. Now I know what kind of show I'm on.
Yes,
just,
you do.
We'll just clunk along.
You should have anticipated this. Yes.
High and Outside's a perfect example of that, because that is a movie that they could have, and they did, and they shopped around to a lot of different production companies, notable ones, to do, and everybody wanted to change it and put this star in it and that, and it was very formulaic, and it would not have been the story that it is now.
Yeah.
So they were able to go that independent route. And, and now with all the digital platforms like Amazon Prime and all these different, you can make a film and get it out there.
So do you feel then much more confident about the ability to do what you want to do because of these many more outlets and avenues?
Yes, absolutely. Comes with a few cons in that, now everybody thinks they can be a filmmaker and an actor.
Exactly.
I mean, if you get a million hits on YouTube, all of a sudden you're a famous person.
Right.
But,
that's another conversation. Right. Yeah. See, High and Outside, which we'll talk about more at length after the news, is I can just see someone going in to pitch it and the producer saying, or some studio head saying, well, could the guy, could he hook on with a team at the end of it and then hit, a home run and win the World Series?
Yeah.
It's not that kind of movie. It is sad in so many ways. It's ultimately, I think, triumphant because your character makes the choice. Mm-hmm. But during the film, the choices you're having to make are not what you want to do.
It's a dark film. However, the director Evald Johnson, who is the son of former Major League Baseball player Tim Johnson, wanted to do one thing, and that was make a real baseball film. And this is the story of 99.9% of guys who try to get to the big leagues.
And also who tried to just hang on in any kind of fashion.
Correct.
They were big baseball studs in high school somewhere.
Yes.
They try to hang on.
No doubt.
We're spending this whole hour with Phil Donlon, the star of High and Outside. One of the co-stars is his friend, Ernie Hudson, who is also the star of The Man in the Silo, which is one of the most haunting films I've ever seen. I wrote about it in 2013. And we'll talk about why that is not playing at, well, it's not going to play in the Star Wars amount of theaters because it's not Star Wars.
Girl, when you awaken, I'll be gone. Can't tell you where I go. It isn't fair, I know.
Welcome back. Happy New Year. This is After Hours with me, Rick Cogan, and my guest, Phil Donlon, and terribly talented actor, director, producer, whose latest film is High and Outside. But, Phil, I want to talk to you about the film that you directed and co-wrote and made with another local guy, Stephen Ordower. It is... As I said in a story, I can't believe it's 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. It is a haunting film. It's a love story. It's a ghost story. It's a psychological thriller. You must have been happy with the script, and you must have been terribly happy in your ability to get a major star to star in this. He's on the phone now from Minneapolis, so... Yes. So you still like this guy, Ernie Hudson? Do you still admire and like and ever want to work with Phil Donlon again?
You know, I'm a big fan of Phil Donlon's. I'm the biggest fan, and I have every faith that he's going to be a huge, huge force in the industry. And I'm betting on Phil.
That's the same way I feel, Mr. Hudson. I've known him for maybe 4, 5, or 6 years, and have watched him kind of grow creatively. And he must be. I got to tell you something. He must be. I loved you in Oz. I loved you in Ghostbusters. You've been in dozens of movies and television shows. But this Man in the Silo is among the great performances, because it's a lot of interior stuff going on here. You are playing a guy who is or may not be going mad, right?
Right. Yeah. I think, which means I basically played myself. But,
or any actor. Yeah. Any actor could do this.
No. It was an interesting script. I was fascinated. I met Phil and Steve, and they got the script to me, and I was really fascinated with the character. And was glad I got a chance to play it.
Well, this is something that Phil told me when I wrote about the movie, actually reviewed and wrote about the movie. He's talking about you here when he said, well, we were paying him peanuts to begin with, and then it got worse. We had to ask him to give the money back. He didn't make a dime. Now, that shows me that your love of that role and affection for it is... It flies in the face of what you think of the avarice of Hollywood. You loved it that much. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think I learned a long time ago that there are going to be projects you're going to make, if you're lucky, a nice piece of money, and there are going to be other projects that you love. But in the end, it all kind of balances out, and projects like Man in the Silo, working with Phil, That's the love of it. And so that makes it possible for me to do the things that I'm not so happy about, but I'm being paid well for.
Sure. I admire that tremendously. You also have a pretty substantial part in High and Outside. How did that come to be? Did Phil twist your arm again?
I kind of did.
Is that how, really?
That's basically what I do. I just call Ernie and I go, Ernie, if you could do me a huge favor.
There's no money in it, Ernie, but you could do me.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
See, I found this.
It's kind of like why I'm on the radio now.
yes, you could. You have other things to do.
Phil calls, and I'm like, well, you know, it is New Year's Day, but but if Phil asks, I'm there.
No, Ernie is amazing.
Well, I'm very appreciative of that. This film, High and Outside, I think this film has a lot of potential. It's dark, no question, and we're going to play your clip, a clip of you talking to Phil when I let you go back to whatever it is you're doing up there. But I appreciate you being on. This film had to appeal to you artistically too, didn't it? As down.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's one thing about Phil. I mean, he chooses great projects. And I read the script. I loved his character in it. And the character I played, I always liked the characters I played. But I really liked the film. It's a act piece, very, very special.
What do you, before I let you go, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate your being on, what, other than the next Phil Donlan production, what are you working on now? Because I've watched your career. You know where I thought you were fabulous? People don't remember this show as well as they should. When you were the warden in Oz, which was, talk about a dark show. But I love that, and I loved your part in that, too. You have anything coming up that people out there should be looking for?
Yeah, there are three things that I'm working on now. I actually feel very good about them because they're all a little bit different. There's a new series on Fox, and we're shooting it in Chicago. It's called APB. It'll start airing February 6th, and it's a futuristic, cop show based on a real story out of New Orleans about a billionaire taking over a police precinct. But I've been really enjoying doing that series. And I do another series on Netflix called Grace and Frankie with Jane Fonda, Lily
Right.
Yeah. I've just can't tell you how much I'm enjoying working with those guys. And on Epix, there's a new series called Graves with Nick Nolte. Nick just got nominated for a Golden Globe.
Yep.
Nick Nolte, a Sea Award. And so I'm kind of doing three right now and loving each one.
Well, you should be. I mean, you are one of the most talented actors out there, and you should be working like crazy. And I'm assuming that you would drop any or all of these parts the next time Phil Donlan calls and says, hey, Ernie, it's Phil.
Ernie, actually, if we have a moment, can I pitch you a project right now called The Phil Donlan Show? How do you feel about playing me?
He wants you to play him in his next movie. Ernie Hudson, you've had a remarkable career, and it seems to be flourishing still. And you are terrific in High and Outside, but you were amazing in The Man in the Silo. That is one of the most difficult parts I've ever seen pulled off as well as I could possibly imagine it being done. So happy New Year to you and great success, and I can't wait to see you in the next Phil Donlan, whatever it is, TV show, movie, anything. Happy New Year to you, Mr. Hudson.
Happy New Year, guys.
Okay, thanks.
Right. Thank you, Ernie, so much.
How did you meet him?
Met him out in L.A. at a film festival. I had another film playing and had the Silo script. And I remember seeing him getting an award, and he was giving a speech. I turned to Steve Ordower, who was with me, and I said, that's our guy.
Because literally. You initially were having another friend,
Dennis Haysbert,
a great actor as well.
Yeah.
And you just said, this is Ernie. And he is unbelievable in that film. What is going on with that film and the vagaries and weirdness of Hollywood?
The producer, Steve, he's trying to work on a distribution deal. It's a difficult movie. I mean, first, the length is odd.
It's an hour, 55 minutes.
Roughly. And it's not a straightforward narrative type story. I mean, it's Bergman, Ingmar Bergman-esque.
No question.
So it's not an easy sell.
But it also must be an astonishing calling card for you. There must be people in the industry who see that movie and go, oh my God.
That it is. Yeah. It's absolutely. And that was sort of why I made it initially, was as a calling card. But, I talked to Steve last night, spent some time with him, and he was feeling pretty upbeat about some possible distribution.
Well, because the other thing about Ernie Hudson is he wound up being in a documentary that Steve Ordower made about his dad and about gospel music, too. The great Sid Ordower, who was on the air for a long, long time and literally with his show Jubilee Showcase spread gospel to everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
Before we take a break, Rachel, would all if we could, this fantastic producer who just came in from out of nowhere to take over the show. If we could play the little, it's about a 2-minute clip. Mm-hmm. This is, set this up for us. This is from the movie High and Outside with you and Ernie Hudson, who is in the film.
Yes.
Your manager. And he's got some, and you're a ball player trying to hang on, and he's got some bad news for you.
Yeah, basically it's, I'm a minor league baseball player. This is the beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I'm getting released.
Yep.
I'm getting let go from the team. And one of the other actors that's in the room is we use the AA team, the Sioux City Explorers, and Stan, who's in the room, was actually the manager of the team. So the director put him in.
Wow.
Stan played for the Angels. And
there are a lot of real ball players.
There's a lot of real
movie.
Ball players in there. So Stan kind of helped put that scene together. Because
Phil Donlan is a soon to be washed up ball player getting the news from his manager, Ernie Hudson. Anything you hear that is a beep, you know what that was.
Right.
So how's your old man holding up?
He's all right. He's good. You know, second stroke kind of wiped him out, but he's hanging in there. So
I'm gonna be straight up with you. I gotta let you go.
Why?
You're just not getting it done, Billy.
I mean, I'm hitting it hard. I'm just hitting it right at him.
I brought you on as a favor to your old man. But you're just at that stage where you're not putting up numbers.
All right, I don't hit 300, don't steal 10 bags, I'll retire.
I'm sorry, Bill. This is it. It
doesn't make any sense, man.
No. Actually, it does.
You wanted me to fail, now you got what you wanted, so I failed.
I'm releasing you because you can't play anymore, okay? You're not hitting. You couldn't hit water if you fell out of a boat.
I've only been thrown out once this year. Once. That's it.
Yeah, you're a base stealer. But correct me if I'm wrong. Hell, you can't steal first base. Am I wrong? Hell, I got a rule book here someplace.
Hey, you know what?
Wait a minute.
All right? I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to catch on with another club. I'm going to stick it up your ass as well.
Sit down. Sit down! I got to do what's best for this team here, son. Now, you're a veteran guy. But I can find a guy who makes half of what you do and plays great defense, who at least makes contact. It ain't about you. It ain't about your goddamn character, okay? You're a great clubhouse guy. You know the game. But you're getting old. And you can't play anymore. You ain't got it anymore.
I'm going to prove you wrong.
Good. Hell, I hope you do. I hope you can do. But God, Bill, have you ever thought about maybe doing something else?
I am done. I'm gonna catch on with another club.
How the you gonna do that? Well, no scout has brought your name up in 6 years. 6 years. I hate to be so blunt with you. I mean, I really do. But it's only because I think the world of you. It's time, son. Half the guys I have this conversation with, they come back 2 years later and they thank me. You can't see it. I know. But everybody else can.
That's a good scene. It's a well-written scene. You can sense the emotion even without the various words that are missing. We'll take a break and come back and talk to Phil Donlan about Nelly High and Outside, and what the fate of that film is likely to be, but what he is looking for in this brand new year.
You gotta have heart. All you really need is heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the grin should start. You gotta have.
Now that, for this final segment with Phil Donlan, is probably the perfect, perfect song. It's from Damn Yankees. Phil's new movie is High and Outside, and boy, it is true of both baseball and acting that you do have to have heart.
Yes.
If you don't have heart, you're going to get chewed up and spit out and wind up, selling Streetwise or something.
Streetwise, if you're lucky. That's the one thing I learned most doing this baseball movie. I can't tell you how excited I am just to be a fan of the game after the immense amount of training I did for the film, because I did train with a lot of big league guys. So,
yeah.
So the director's father, Tim Johnson, who was a part of the old shortstop, second base, Robin Yount, duo in, wow, for in the Brewers. Wow. So he, Tim Johnson, played second base. Robin Yount played short. His father went on to bench coach the Red Sox and then managed the Toronto Blue Jays in the late 90s when Clemens went over to Blue Jays.
Sure.
His dad really gave me a ton of access into the world. So, you know, for example, I'm at dinner one night with Roger Clemens and his son. You know, stuff like I'm hanging out with guys that, like, I collected their baseball cards. I'm taking batting practice off of Roger Clemens. I'm pinching myself going, really, this is happening? Yes, it is.
And, you hit him?
Well, I hit two home runs off of him.
You should have stayed in baseball. What's the matter with you?
But it was tough, and I really learned how tough the game is, and that's one of the beautiful things about the film. Because, believe me, most baseball movies are about the romance of the game.
Of course.
And that's definitely a part of it. But what's also never really talked about is the off-field life, which is what these guys live most of the time.
There's a desperation there. You in the film, your dad is a former famous.
Played by the late Jeffrey Lewis. His last film, he passed away after shooting.
Who is really also haunting in the film, and he has some memorabilia, and you are the desperate son with a family of your own.
Correct.
You must have... Were you approached for the part, or did you hear about it?
Well, how this happened was I was doing a Sam Shepard play with Jeff Lewis, maybe back in like 2010, I think, Fool for Love. And we were doing the show, and we were at Jeff's house after, and I had Ewald, the director, with me because he's a buddy of mine. Yeah. And Jeff's wife in the room said, she looked at Jeff and I and she said, you two should play father and son in something.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know. Maybe about a year later, Ewald calls me up. He goes, I've got this idea for a film. And, you know, the film is, I'm not going to say necessarily like it's a biopic of his life, but it's what he saw growing up.
Sure.
I mean, this guy rode, you know, the director rode on buses with like Sandy Koufax.
Yeah.
He actually borrowed $10 from Sandy Koufax once. So, I mean, like he really knew the guys. He knew the life. He went the filmmaking route, not the baseball route. And so he's really, the best thing I can say is that we showed some of the early cuts to some baseball guys like Roger Clemens.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, I was in Palm Springs. I was in this hotel suite with all these guys, and I showed the scene between me and Jeff. There's this scene where we have this argument in the hallway, at our house. And after the scene, it was silent. And I thought, wow, we really messed up. And one of the big league guys sort of spoke up and said, how did you guys know? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, how did you know that's like a scene from my life with my son? And then we showed other scenes, and another guy's like, that's the argument I had with my wife 15 years ago before she divorced me. And like, they were like, this, guys were crying. I mean, it was amazing.
What a great, great endorsement. Yeah. What? Now that it is January 1st of the year 2017, what do you hope for this movie, High and Outside? What is the future for High and Outside?
Well, first I want to at least plug the website, highandoutside.com.
By all means.
Yeah, so that'll always have, you know, info about what's happening with it. A lot of distribution offers for it, but they are awaiting which film festival they would like to see this play at first. And that news will be coming soon, I would say in the next month or two. And we're hoping to have a run here in Chicago. They would love to see at least a limited release I'm sure it'll get.
Then I can write about it, too, because I'm your official biographer.
You are.
If Phil ever winds up killing a bunch of people in Hollywood, then I'll become a best-selling author.
Will you write a book on me?
Yes, I will.
What
else are you working on? That's great news. That's great news because High and Outside is a terrific film, and you are extraordinarily good in it, too.
Well, thank you
because
very much.
Because it's a role of varying emotions from sadness to craziness to depression to some elation.
By the way, a good little Chicago cast in there as well. A lot of Chicago actors that are in there.
That's right. So. What else are you working on?
Well, Rick, there's this project called Lords of the Levee.
Yes, you've wanted to do that.
And I don't know if you know about that book or
I
not.
Do. I've read that book a thousand times. It's a book written by my father and Lloyd Wendt in 1943 about the two infamous aldermen of the First Ward, Bathhouse John Coughlin and Michael Hinky Dink Kenna. Mm-hmm. And you fell in love with that book a long time ago.
Yeah, Joe found it in a bookstore, I think, in Michigan. Yeah. And then him and I, since then, have been working on, you know, putting this thing together, and we're so close right now.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah, so, and we've got Nick Pileggi. We're writing it with Nick Pileggi, Goodfellas and Casino.
Which is not a bad thing.
No.
Which is not a bad thing.
Again.
Are you guys going to play parts in this, do you think, if it
we
ever
hope
gets
so.
Made?
Yeah, we're both, executive producers on the show.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, I want both of you, because Joe Secor is an awfully decent guy, too, and you guys are friends, and that's how I met the two of you. And very creative guys who don't want to be stuck kind of in the yoke of Hollywood, going to audition after audition. You want to make, I think, your own roads. And
yeah.
I think you can.
I think Ernie would testify to this as well. I mean, you got to work and you got to make a living, but you do have to do your own stuff. You have to.
See, he now.
Unless you're Tom Hanks.
Well, but also, unless you're Ernie Hudson, too, he says he now has the freedom. Mm-hmm. To basically work for free for you because he gets
I hope
other...
that changes one day. I don't want to be known as the guy that worked for him.
I think
for
he'd
free.
Do it. Even if you became a mogul like George Lucas, then he would still say, you're going to pay me? Are you kidding? I work for free for you.
Yeah.
Phil, it's great to see your career like this. It is great to see High and Outside. So keep you, ladies and gentlemen... Keep your eyes peeled for highandoutside.com to see what's going on.
Highandoutside.com. There's a trailer on there.
Yeah, take a look at that, too. Yeah. Your brother seems like a very cool guy with a real job.
He's the son they're proud of.
Well, and your parents are good people to support you
amazing.
In this, too.
Yes.
Safe travels back to crazy old Hollywood, Phil.
Yes, absolutely.
Happy New Year.